feel like I should be talking in a posh accent for this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to.
Oh, that's another question.
So this is actually the least prepared Brett has ever been for a podcast that we've done.
Yeah, so this is either going to be great or it's going to be
dangerous.
Horrible. There's going to be no in between.
Very dangerous. So why are we here? What are we talking about? We're back first time in 23, right?
Yes.
Yes. Why? Why are we here?
We are here with a special edition to talk about...
A spare edition.
Spare. So we're a little late on this, as the book came out in early January, but I think it's good because the book has been rehashed by pretty much everyone, but Paolo has a unique perspective and he's going to tell you why. And we both thought it would be fun for us today to chat a little bit about the book and then just some more background things of differences between Britain and America, the monarchy.
Yeah.
I've never really talked to you about this, so it should be interesting.
I'm curious.
A good word
for it.
So you have perspective as both someone from England and having lived in America.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your background? We'll start off there.
Well, yeah, obviously grew up in England, for those of you guys that don't know that. Moved here when I was 21. I've switched my positions on the royals and the monarchy a number of times, and we'll get into where I've landed, but I've been really like in favor of them, and then I've been really not, and you know, I'm kind of there now, but I just don't understand why people are so freaking obsessed with them.
Well, wait, okay, so you, how old were you when you moved here?
I'm ready to go.
I do, you're ready, you want to get into it.
Okay.
How old were you when you moved here?
21.
Do you have dual citizenship right now?
I do.
So you spent your formative years in England?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
For intents and purposes, I'm English, really.
Right.
I'm an American dad, but, you know.
For some reason, I thought you moved here sooner than that.
No, no.
Huh.
That's why I got this accent.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were growing up, first of all, what was your family's viewpoint toward the monarchy?
I mean, really, to be honest, what's interesting, right? It's very ingrained in you from the very beginning. I mean, the queen and now the king's face is on every single piece of money, whether that be a coin or a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You see the face all the time.
Right.
So it's constantly ingrained in you that they are the top dog of society in England. And then, you know, they do their bit to get into the communities with the little minions and the underlings. But I think the first memory I really have of the royals is actually when Diana died. I remember...
How old were you?
Maybe 7 or 8. It was 94, I think, right? So, yeah, it's 7.
Yeah.
I remember turning on the TV in the morning, seeing the news. My parents were still in bed, probably hungover. Ran upstairs and said, Princess Diana's died, and they both thought I was lying, making it up. And then they even said, don't make that up. Then of course they came down to see, and that was like the first like national tragedy I'd experienced.
Mm.
2 years later, England went out of the Euros on penalties to Germany, which was an even bigger tragedy if you ask me. But yeah, that's really the first memory I have of the royals, so to speak.
So in England, like here we think of the president kind of at the top. Do you think of the king or queen, or do you think of the prime minister?
Well, I think when you're younger, you probably think of the king and queen because they got all the jewels and the guards and all that stuff. But as you get older, you realize they don't really have that much. Well, I take that back. I think they have more political sway than they say. Like the prime minister still has to go and report to the king or queen once a week, maybe. But when was it? It may have been under Blair in the 90s. It may have been earlier than that, where they passed an act or a bill, whatever they called it in the UK. So it's interesting. A lot of my references in adult life are here. I don't really know stuff like that in England.
Yeah, so interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So whatever they call it. And it basically removed a lot of the powers from the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm sure they have a lot more influence. The biggest property owner in the country.
Right.
Like you have power when you have that kind of thing.
Was there anybody in your world who was anti-monarchy?
Not one in my immediate family.
That,
I mean, a lot of you know, the man on the street, a lot of them were kind of against them. You got like the patriots
mm-hmm.
who were like, you know, God save the Queen and all that. But I'd say, you know, I had a good mix growing up of like people who from all walks of life and mm-hmm. had views on different views on everything. So
would you say you grew up in like a middle class
environment? Yeah, definitely. Okay. That's the beauty of England and London, is that, you know, you could be in a beautiful neighborhood and then right around the corner you've got, you know, the council estate where, mm-hmm. you know, there's lower income. So you're around a mixing pot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, got tons of different views on it. And then, you know, so that's kind of why my opinions of them shifted all the time, because I was like,
yeah,
I was hanging out with these people more than I was hearing it more. So I was like, yeah, you're right, actually. And then be like, oh, no, yeah, they're okay. So it was a bit of both.
It's kind of interesting to hear that in light of this book, you know, when you think about it as their face on the currency. You know, I knew that, but I hadn't even really considered yeah. like the power of that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that really interests me, in this book, Harry talks a lot about his dad mm-hmm. and his relationship with his parents. And it's clear, like, to me throughout the book, one of the things that's very touching is that he obviously has a lot of love for his father. And he doesn't really go there in criticizing his father. He does it gently here and there, but overall, you know, his father calls him dear boy. But at the same time, like, he had no affection from his parents growing up. And I know there is a stereotype that Brits are sort of reserved yeah. and standoffish, not like Americans that will jump on you and hug you. And
yeah, there was
would
a bit
you
of that.
Say that's accurate?
Yes and no. I mean, it, again, all walks of life. You know, I saw families that were a lot more huggy and affectionate than mine are, but then I saw families that were less. So it varies. I think what really strikes me with, full disclosure, I haven't read the book. I did watch the documentary. I didn't want to read the book. I have a copy of it. I didn't want to read it before this because I want to have the perspective of just what I've seen and heard mm-hmm. versus like what Harry's saying. But I lost, what were we talking about? I just lost my train of thought.
So just the demeanor of Brits and the stereotype.
Yeah, so what really, you know, thinking about the monarchy and where they are now, I think, and especially this story, and I'm getting a lot of it from the documentary I saw of him and Meghan, it just seems that, you know, when you say blood is thicker, with the monarchy, it's the...
firm is thicker.
The family
name. The institution.
Name. Yes, the institution is thicker than yeah. the family. And all this drama going on is really about protecting the institution versus protecting the family members.
Right.
You know, and that's really kind of sad that, you know, if we're going to hold these people to such a high standard, you know, family value should be at the forefront.
Yes.
Versus money, fame, and essentially greed.
Right.
So I think that's really the tragedy here.
Do you think at all about like the history of the royal family and like the, you know, how they basically have plundered all the jewels and, you know, imperialism?
Oh,
do you
it's
think
crazy.
About that?
Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. Like, you know, the amount of people that were killed, the bloodsheds, all
yeah.
of that stuff, all for power. All of it.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys were related to the freaking Nazis. So, you know, No one's got a clean nose, so to speak.
Well, and there is a big part, well, not a big, but there is part of the book where he talks about, like, he had to address the Nazi costume incident. Mm-hmm. Were you here? You're probably here.
I was there for that.
Oh, you were. So tell me what it was like when you were there. Was it even a thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a big thing in the media. I think everybody just was just like, stupid kid.
Yeah.
So we're about the same age, I think. So, you know, he was kind of growing up when I was growing up, so I can understand why he, I mean, stupid thing to do, but...
Because he says he was mortified and he had to go to, like, you know, training, or not training, but he went and spoke with a rabbi and he realized, you know, he knew it was, like, wrong, but he didn't realize how bad it was. And he said that it's like, very normalized to... A lot of just very, like, inappropriate behavior
yeah,
is normalized.
You have to remember this kid grew up going to, like, elite schools. He's
yeah.
around people where they don't face the same problems as everybody else. their history is not the same history we learn. Like,
yeah.
They learn how to make money, how to have power. We learn how to be slaves to that power. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the education system. So, you know, his reference points were off, and he was just, yeah, stupid kid, bad mistake. But, I mean, it's better than Justin Trudeau doing blackface how many times as an adult, right?
So, you know. And he says, so one of his issues is that he feels, that's part of the reason why the book is called Spare, is that he feels he was kind of offered up in place of William
to
deter attention from William. Yeah. And so he had to take the fall and become like the bad kid, mm-hmm. and the kid who always messes up, and oh, Harry, like he can never get it right. And he says that like that became his like label.
Yeah, I mean, imagine growing up under that spotlight and everything you do is magnified, and you do a stupid thing as a kid. I mean, listen, how anyone let the guy out of the house in a Nazi costume in the first place? You're telling me he wasn't going around with bodyguards, and a bodyguard didn't call up his dad and say, hey mate, Harry's about to step out in a Nazi costume, should we do something?
Right.
You know, it just, that makes sense that he was the fool kid. It's almost like, oh, let him do it.
Right.
We know how to handle that.
Going back to Diana's death, he says that in the day, you know, the day or two after when they first came out and were looking at the flowers, he says that he was really told to do that. And he was, I think, 7, 8, such a young age. And he, at the time, and until he was like an adult, believed that his mom had just gone away. Mm-hmm. He couldn't accept the fact that she died. And your memory at that time, were you thinking about any of that, or were you just too young?
I remember thinking, like, poor kids. Yeah, and, you know, it kind of made me think about my parents. I'm like, oh, imagine my parents would died now, and, you know, that would suck. But yes, and there was a lot of sympathy for them, for sure. There was a lot of anger, I remember, towards the royal family at that time. If I remember, I don't think the Queen spoke on it for a good amount of time.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know how deep you want to get into my thoughts on that whole situation, but
yeah, no, you can tell me.
I personally think that my opinion only, free speech before they come for me. I think the royal family were behind her death for sure.
Oh, no, you're not the only one. A lot of people, especially like as time goes on and the public actually finds out more.
Look what they're willing to do to their own flesh and blood.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so she was a threat to the institution. She was more popular. So, but yeah, I remember being sympathetic to him. And even then I was kind of like, just leave them alone. Like, stop parading them around. You know, like, they should be locked away, hidden from the media, let them grieve. But instead they were just, you know.
And they were never, according to Harry, allegedly, they were never allowed to grieve. Which is part of the reason why he dealt with this in such a, you know, horrible way.
Yeah, of course.
And he had PTSD. Mm-hmm. And explains a lot of his behavior when he was growing up.
Yeah.
And then he went into the military and got PTSD from that. And I think in this book, one of my takeaways is that it's still clear to me that he's like really still recovering. Yeah. He does not seem to be like 100% better.
That's probably why he removed himself from the whole situation, right?
So tell me about another key piece of this book is the press. And Harry claims, a lot of people get confused because, well, recently Harry and Meghan chose to have their children bestowed with titles. And that was their right. And a lot of people say, why did they do that, given how much they hate, you know, being in the monarchy? And Harry says, kind of at the end of Spare, that his issue isn't with the monarchy. He's actually, you know, he supports the monarchy. His issue is with the press and the twisted relationship that the press has with the royal family.
Yeah.
Why is the press so like toxic and pervasive?
Because they were allowed to be. You know, you give them, think about, there's a lot of celebrities that stay out of the limelight. Like, when was the last time you ever saw someone like Samuel L. Jackson in trouble with something, or Denzel Washington? These are just actors that come into mind. There's some musicians too that just stay out of the limelight. If you give people access and you give them the permissions to do this kind of stuff, they're going to do it. And it just, I think over there is just the monarchy used the press in such a way to, it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of the show Succession. Did you watch that?
Yes, I love that show.
Yeah, I love it. Back on soon.
Can't wait.
But how they're all vying for position, right? So that's what it seems to be within the royal family. They're all vying for position, power. You know, there's only going to be one lineage of who's next in line, but there's a lot of seats that can be taken around it. So they're all vying for position. They all use the press that way. So they just keep feeding them stuff, and then it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. There's no one to check it.
When you were growing up, did you think Harry and William had like a good close relationship?
They seemed tight, yeah.
They weren't.
No, they seemed it.
Which is surprising, but you know, he says that that's a narrative. Mm-hmm. That's been a narrative the whole time. So people were so surprised when he and Meghan kind of like broke away, and they were saying it's all Meghan's fault, but mm-hmm. he's like, that's not true at all.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of William, if I'm honest. He comes across well in interviews I've seen with him, but I often find when people aren't given access, you know, so the documentary with Harry and Meghan, that really kind of swayed my opinion of them. Yes, you can, you know, you see it reality TV, right? You can make things look how they want to look, but there are just some things that you can tell were just genuine. And, you know, with William and Kate, there's no access. Like, you don't get to see behind the scenes at all, so...
Nor will we ever. Yeah,
what are you hiding?
Yeah.
Whereas with these guys, like, just the way a father or a mother looks at their kid, you can tell that's not fake. You can tell there's genuine love there and concern. And so, yeah, William's a hard one for me to crack. But I could see a lot of what Harry's saying to be true about him, and especially their relationship, obviously.
Well, and allegedly he had an affair.
Yes.
And Harry was used to divert attention from it. Mm-hmm. Again. Which is, like, sick. But,
yeah.
Another thing I wanted to bring up is, this is kind of like taking a little bit of a tangent, but I want to talk about accents for a minute.
Okay.
What kind of accent do you have?
I'm kind of Cockney. I'm not like full Cockney. I'd probably be like a, because my mom is pretty well spoken. So I'm probably like 70% Cockney. And it's obviously being
Cockney is London?
London, yeah.
Okay. And then what would William and Kate be?
Posh.
You would call it posh?
Yes. They're posh.
And is it from a geographic area, or it's your socioeconomic...
It's just how you talk. You sound like you got a dick in your mouth. That's posh.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. Okay. So, we've got Cockney posh. What else is there?
Oh, there's just all different regional accents.
Yeah.
You've got the country accents. And actually, the west and the east of the country around London, they have the same accents, because the legend goes that the farmers were migrating across, and the Londoners were like, no, keep going.
Really?
You can't stay here. And they went over.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And that's where the Cockney rhyming slang comes from, is that they didn't want people to understand what they were saying, so they started all the rhyming slang.
Wow. Yeah. So what's an example of Cockney slang or rhyming slang?
Rhyming slang.
All right,
like apple and pears is a good one.
What is that?
Stairs.
Okay.
You're having a bubble bath, laugh.
Okay.
There's a lot. You forget them when you don't use them.
Okay, here's one for you. So in the book, mm-hmm. Harry talks a lot about his penis. Mm-hmm. And he calls it his todger.
Okay.
Is that posh? Or is that just English?
I would never refer to mine as a todger, because that just makes it sound small. Like a little, sounds like a little tater tot. Right?
That's too good.
Yeah, I've heard that he talks a lot about it. I'm not quite sure why.
Not either. Like one time, okay, but he goes into great detail, more detail than we ever needed. Mm-hmm. And todger, I think, was a new word to a lot of Americans.
Yeah, I've never used it.
No.
I've used many words for it, but never that.
What is your favorite What?
Time for penis?
No, what? I'm moving on. Trust me, I'm surrounded by enough. When you, or...
That, do you want to clarify that?
Yeah, I do. I paused. I have 3 sons and a husband. Like, I don't have any daughters except for my dog, so.
There's conversations, a lot of
maleness, shall we say? What is your favorite Britishism slang words that you've kept?
Oh, there's a lot. But you kind of have to stop using them because people just don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of my English friends say I sound American.
Really? Yeah.
But it's just, I always say, right, and I've probably said on this podcast before, the Americans go up at the end of a conversation, English people go down. So it's just
never realized that. Wow.
Yeah.
If you went back, would you just
I think right so. Back? And, like, even when I'm talking to, like, especially someone like my friend Mitch, we get going, I'm, you know, hey, what's up, geezer, how's it going? You know, it's really the company
that we live.
Yeah.
So what do
actually,
you...
the best, my favorite Britishism is the C word, but over here it's incredibly offensive, so...
Yeah, that word's a no-no.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why is that word?
I don't either, and I don't either.
Here's what my argument for it is. Let's just, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
A-hole. Perfectly acceptable, right?
Totally.
What comes out of that?
Yeah.
Poop.
Yeah.
C word. What comes out of that?
Babies.
Life. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So why is that more offensive than something that produces poop?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Stick that in your todger.
We have to look. Can you stick something in your todger, though?
Yes. Not very pleasant for someone, but...
I think we'd have to look up the meaning of that word.
What word?
You can go on a deep dive of the C word.
That's one of my other favorite Britishisms, is that... Is that even a word? Did you make that
word? Well, it is now.
It is now.
Yeah.
Over there, you can say any word you want. You can call someone any name. It's all about the delivery and the intent behind it. You know, so you can call someone that, but it's like a term of endearment.
Do Brits have a thicker skin?
Maybe. I mean, they're kind of just as woke over there now too, but just like the way you called each other a prick and whatnot, but it's like how you say it. You can be really aggressive with it, and then you know, like, oh, I need to defend myself here, or it's just like a laugh and just, oh, shut up, you whatever, you know. It's a big difference, the way that those words are thrown around.
So what to you was the most, like, surprising thing about the documentary and Meghan and Harry?
I think to me it was really just, I got that, again, I know you can manipulate how you want to say, maybe they probably had creative control over the whole thing.
They did, and it's their take, and they're entitled to that.
But I just felt it was genuine that they were really just trying to look after their family, and he did not want his kids to grow up the way he did, and I wouldn't wish that on any kid. And as like a father myself, I completely understand like why he would want to remove himself from that. You know, and all these people, oh, they're disrespecting the royals, blah, blah, blah.
He's 7th in line. Like, fine. Like, he should go.
There's people saying he shouldn't be called the prince anymore. All right, first off, do we want to go to the prince? Do we talk about Prince Andrew?
Right.
The kiddie fiddler?
Oh my God.
So he's still a prince? Everyone's okay with
that?
And
he just got their house.
He just got their
house.
And
he wouldn't take it because it's not grand enough.
Yeah, can't have as many kids in there, can he? Then you've got this kid who grew up under such tragic circumstances, lost his mother. Of course he can call himself a fucking prince. Why not?
Well, he is a prince. It's his birthright.
Right?
Like,
yeah. You can't just take it away.
No, you can't.
Because he's not doing what he's not falling in line.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not like he still uses it, obviously, but I don't think they're, like, parading around. You know, people here, it's different here. Like, if he walked around saying, hello, I'm Prince, this, or if he used it for his own gain, like, I just don't think people here have the same view of it.
You know what I would do if I was him, too? If they did take the title away, I'm going straight down Social Security and changing my name to Prince Harry. So now, yeah, what now? That's my name, right?
Prince Paolo.
Yeah. I mean, why not, right?
Yeah. I don't think they will ever take it away. Especially because his son now is a prince. His son is a prince and his daughter's a princess.
Yeah, you know, the whole cutting the allowance and whatever. All right, fine. He doesn't want it anyway.
They're doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just fine. But I don't like the talk of, oh, they're using the name. Blah. It's his name, right?
Yeah.
Let him use it.
Yeah. I think, too, that, William really didn't have a choice. Like, you know, William has to fall in line. Like, it's just, he does. But Harry, he is the spare.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, way down on the line of succession. So
they just have less use for him now, right?
Yeah, and I think he and Meghan offered to go other places and continue to be working royals. Like, they wanted to find a solution. Mm. It's Charles who refused.
Yeah, and, you know, much like Diana, you know, you've got a strong woman who doesn't want to curtail or bow down to...
Yeah, and she's American, and I think that ruffled feathers.
Yeah, now, the whole race thing, I don't know how much of it is because of that. I would never want to speak on, like, someone else's feeling when I can't relate to that. Like, I'm not black. I don't know what it's like to grow up like that. So I don't know how much of that is really true in terms of being treated a certain way because she's not white.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it wouldn't matter what her race is. The fact that she's not falling in line is the real problem.
Yeah, and I think it's almost more that she's American.
Yeah.
She was an actress, and apparently, like, they think, you know, actress is, like, mm-hmm. really low. Like, you may as well be a prostitute.
Yeah.
She'd been married before. Like, all these things, I think, to this set were just not acceptable.
Yeah, and just everybody loved her until...
They didn't.
Yeah. I mean, Piers Morgan's a great example of that. I generally agree with a lot of what he says outside of his shocking choice of a football team. But, you know, he loved her because he was at the pub with her the night that she was going off to meet him for the first time on a date. So he was part of the story. So he loved it. He was all raving about it. Wrote an article about it. And then she started ignoring him.
Mm.
You know, wasn't returning his texts or whatever. And maybe some of that was because the royal family told her to stop.
Oh, I'm sure.
Talking to certain people without their approval. So then you turn on her, right? And he actually famously walked off a TV set because he was being called out by another presenter, like, why are you bullying her, kind of thing.
Mm.
And he stormed off the set and didn't go back to work. So, you know, I think, like you said, everyone loved her until they didn't. Diana was able to... And listen, maybe Diana was better, she better network the press. She knew how to work the press just as well.
I think also, you know, Harry compares Meghan to Diana, and I have to say, like, I don't buy it. I don't get it. I think Diana had a charisma that Meghan doesn't have. I don't know that anyone will ever have position. I don't think, to me, Meghan doesn't have the same, she's just completely different. Not that she's not doing good work and, you know, a strong woman, to me, Diana's her own
thing. I can see why he feels that way. I can see the appeal of him, like, being with a woman that reminds him of his mom. Like,
she what he wants.
Yeah, you know? He does a lot of work. She does a lot of work. He does too, you know, in Africa. And that, you know, that was very important to Diana too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, did you listen to the Diana tapes? I think it was on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, not the... I mean, I think here and there I've listened to, like, snippets.
Yeah, I mean, how she was being treated was just disgusting.
Yes, you know? Yes.
And he probably saw the warning signs that this was going to happen to his wife, too.
Yes.
So let's get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't have a problem with that.
No, I don't either.
I would say I'm firmly... Not that I really care, because I don't, but if you ask me, I'd be Team Harry and Meghan.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they now live in Montecito, one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Yeah.
They live in, like, a mansion. They have two beautiful children.
Yeah.
They get to do the work they want to do. They seem to have no problem with money.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you... I mean, life is good.
I think he actually broke it down the best. I get... You open yourself up when you put a book out, right?
Yeah.
You're giving people an opportunity to take jabs at you. But then you also have to put the book out because they're doing it anyway.
So well, that's what he says. He wanted to set the record straight. Like, there's things in here that he addresses, like, all these incidents that have happened in his life, because you can tell, like, he's trying to, he wants people to know that, like, this is what actually happened. There's things that he's like, that was wrong. Like, that was incorrect. Yeah. This is what happened.
And he even talks, I forget which talk show he was on after the book came out, but he was like, this is a good example. They're saying, I think he's talking about his time in Afghanistan and what was reported that he supposedly said in the book. And he's like, no, there's a whole chapter about how much, you know, I wanted to protect the identity, you know, and all that stuff. But they made out like he was a national security risk and putting people's lives at danger.
The whole middle section of the book is about his time in the military. And obviously, like, I think it's so heartbreaking because I think, like, for him, in a perfect world, he would have stayed in the military his whole life. Like, that seems to be where he was happiest and where he felt at home. Yeah. And you can just tell he goes into such detail in the book. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. But you can see, like, how special it was to him. And because of the press, both times when he was called off duty, it was because of the press that found out his location, that he had to be pulled. Yeah. But he did, I mean, he really, like, he made some serious contributions. Like, he legit is an Apache helicopter pilot. Like, I just feel like his accomplishments were really downplayed.
Definitely.
And I think it is very sad that he was stripped of his military credentials. Because that, again, like, he did that. Like, you can't take that away from him.
He put his life at risk. He went into a war zone, right?
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Willingly. You know, and now he has PTSD.
Yeah. And actually, I think that might be one reason he talked about his todger. I can't even say the damn word todger so much. Was he was probably throwing stuff in there to be like, are you going to talk about this? Or are you going to twist something else?
Maybe. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
So almost kind of throwing, almost a red herring, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up, and at college, my girlfriend there was good friends with a good friend of his. So I heard kind of firsthand from her. He was a real nice guy, sweet, fun, you know.
Yeah.
So I kind of like to judge people on my experience or people I know's experience with them versus like what's talked about them in the press. Mm-hmm. So that's always been really my impression of him. He's actually a decent guy.
And I think he, in this book, he really, like, he's a little bit too TMI.
Yeah.
But he really, some of the snippets that came out initially, because the book was leaked, because it was put on sale in Spain, like, before the embargo date. But some of the things that were leaked, I feel like the press really twisted it. Like, they said, he said something about Will's balding. And they were like, that's so mean and horrible. But in the book, it's actually quite funny because he talks about his own balding. And he was like, you know, the full sentence is that it's something to do with, like, William being more advanced than me, you know, as of now. But eventually, like, I will too probably be bald.
Yeah, but
They didn't want to put in that piece.
It's like him saying, I've got red hair.
He's like, just making a joke. Yeah. Like,
well, it's pretty obvious the guy's balding. He's been balding since he was 20.
Yeah.
He's got that royal hairline.
And I listened to it. And I listened to it, which was great. He's a really good narrator. He really did a wonderful job. And then his ghostwriter on this is extremely accomplished and also did an incredible job.
And I swear, I was watching, I've almost finished it, the Murdoch Murders on Netflix.
You have no idea how invested I am. I'm a 13th juror. Like, literally, I could go to court right now. Let's go. Let's
well, you're not supposed to
go.
Know these details if you're on the jury. You'd probably get.
You know, I'm
off.
I'm a lawyer.
Yeah. But watching that reminded me a lot of the Royals. Because you're like, protecting the institution.
1,000,000%.
All the shit that
it's
gets swept
sick.
Up underneath the murders.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you
you're
know.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
And we don't do that here in this country.
You can go real deep with the conspiracy stuff. I believe a lot of it. Some of it's a bit far fetched. But as sweet and kind as the elders of the royal family seemed, they were protecting the institution and protected at all costs. So I do not doubt that there was some foul play on, you know, across the board.
Oh yeah,
even the Prince Andrew thing, carefully managed.
Incredible.
Right? They try and put him out on TV to do an interview. Absolute train wreck.
Yep.
You know, the guy says he can't sweat. Then they find a picture of him sweating. I mean, come on.
He can't sweat.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
what?
No, that can't have been me. I have this condition where I can't sweat. Right? Car crash. So they just push him to the side. Can't admit that he actually did what he did because it'll bring down, and I actually think will expose more members of the royal family. He's just the fall guy for the pedophilia.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but that show really reminded me. It was like, protect the name, not the people.
100%.
Yeah.
I saw a video yesterday of Queen Elizabeth when she was younger. So Charles would have been probably like 4 or 5, and she's coming off of a train and she's been away for 2 months. Mm-hmm. They say this is the first time she had seen her son in 2 months. So he's standing there with like a minder and some other people. And she just walks up. She doesn't even say hi to him first. She shakes the hands of all the adults and then she like bends down and pats him on the head and walks away.
I was gonna say, I bet there was a head pat.
She hadn't seen him in 2 months.
Yeah.
And he was young. He was like 5 years old.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, I'm sure that was...
And she had to, because obviously the press was there. So she couldn't show emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, carefully managed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at this point, why do we still have a monarchy? Why
right, that leads into, like, that's not impressive anymore. Like,
No, I'd rather you were put in place, you know, no matter what side of the political spectrum you are, at least someone, the majority, was put into... position of power, right? It's not like you were just born and
they're appointed by God, right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
So that alone is like, what?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, and they have the technically they control the church over there too. That's a dangerous game.
Yeah.
And I saw one stat. I don't know if it's really true. How much it's going to cost to hold the coronation coming up? The stat I saw was 100 million, but that seems way, way too much. But it's going to be a lot of money.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, the security and everything.
Yeah. Security alone is millions.
Yeah, why not film it on TV, no crowd, and then give that money to the poor or something?
I agree.
For the people, help the people in the UK pay their energy bills.
I agree.
You know, so if you're really about the people...
I know.
You know, so...
And I think Charles likes to style himself as, like, you know...
Oh, he's a
conservationist, and
he comes across very rude.
Oh yeah, he seems beyond entitled. Beyond entitled. I mean,
Well, and but then you're like this guy grew up waiting and waiting and waiting to be the king. You know, now he's in his late 60s, the king, and he's ain't got that much of his prime left to have his fun. So,
but it's like in this book, one of the things that came across to me is that. It's clear he has a lot of love for Harry, but he just can't, he cannot express it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, because he never got that kind of love and affection. So he doesn't know how, he does not know how to express it.
Yeah.
So like calling him dear boy is pretty much the extent of his kind of affection.
Yeah, and what was it, their meeting, the two of them, the brothers? Because that was part of the conditions Harry wanted for him to come to the coronation, right? Was he wanted a meeting with the three of them?
The coronation?
Isn't that what I heard?
I don't know. I don't know about that. I've kind of, I have to say, like,
I don't,
I've lost
yeah,
interest.
I don't follow it,
this was like, this book, you know, was a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of taking a little bit of a breather. I follow it, you know, a little bit, but.
But yeah, I guess it was declined, but him and William are going to sit down. There's a lot of, nothing's going to come of it.
I feel like that's not real.
No.
I feel like they're doing that for the press.
Yeah.
Because they want William to seem magnanimous.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet, I mean, there's incidents in this book where Will, like, beats him.
Really?
Yeah. He has apparently quite a temper.
I could see that.
And is, like, violent toward Harry.
Yeah, I could see that.
So.
And again, if you're, like, if you know you're next in line, you can... do what you want.
Right.
No consequences.
Right.
Just like that Murdoch boy.
Oh,
or both of them.
We'll have to do, maybe we'll do another podcast and deep dive there.
On the Murdoch murders. Yeah. But yeah, so I'm not a fan of the royals. I'm all for Harry forging his own life. And of course, use it, milk it. You had to deal with so much. You had to deal with so much growing up.
I feel like I want him to just be happy.
Yeah.
He seems to really, really love Meghan. And
yeah.
I think that's great. And I hope that they're happy.
Yeah.
And they can build their own life here.
Yeah. And I will say, I think people should stop calling their kids Harry. Because every Harry that I know, they're called H.
I don't
like
that.
No one likes saying Harry.
Every Harry you know is called H?
Yeah.
American?
I don't know any Americans called Harry.
Right. So why do you say H? Why do people say H?
Because it's a Harry. Harry. Harry.
To me, H is just like, what?
Well, the funny thing is,
it's so awkward even to say H. I don't know.
No one pronounces the H when they say Harry because it's Harry. Really, when you're over there, it's Harry. But they'll say H. So.
He says he was Haz.
Haz, yeah.
Haz is like the main name.
I was Haz.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Haz a lot better than H.
Yeah, Haz, you know, but then Harriet. It's more of, you call Harriet Haz.
You do?
Yeah.
Interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah.
I think American Harry would be cute, no? No.
Oh, Harry. No.
Actually, it sounds too much like Harry.
Yeah,
like, Harry. Depending on your accent,
yeah, it
could be...
Forget it.
I'm done having kids, but...
Yeah, and I'm also, I resonate with Harry because he's a redhead like my boy, so...
He's a ginger.
Yeah, so I have some empathy for him for that.
I love it.
Yeah, you know. And my beard's a little red, too. It's getting white now, but... Yeah, so I to wrap it up, I would say I'm very much anti-royals.
Are you anti-monarchy, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what are we doing at this point?
Like, you're not going to go protest at the coronation, but...
No. But I wouldn't be seen dead there at the same time.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't understand why people over here love it so much. Just maybe because you just don't have it, but like...
Yeah.
Are we forgetting that you guys fought really hard to not have us around?
I know. And then, like, when you
now
really...
Now you're celebrating it.
I think the people that are obsessed with it, I think a lot of it's like fashion. Some of it's fashion.
Fashion?
They're fat, you know.
They all look like stuffy snobs. None of them wear clothes that fit.
Well, yes, they do. They have tailors.
Not very good ones.
Kate sure does. You've got to admit.
She doesn't fit in anything.
Yeah, but she has a seamstress and tailor, like, on call. I mean...
Surprisingly, I do not know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, every outfit is meticulously planned and thought out, how it's going to be seen in public, if you need to be seen close or far away, if you're in a crowd or not. It's, like, planned down to the most meticulous detail.
Yeah.
But I think people are... I don't know. I think they have a romantic... There's this romantic vision of princes and princesses. But then if you think about, like, you really have to think about the reality of imperialism.
Yeah.
And that alone, if you think about imperialism, you're kind of like, oh.
Yeah, I do think the queen played a lot of that, especially in her older years, because she was like this cute, cuddly
Yeah, well, she did an amazing job. I mean.
But it's actually kind of what our friend, I don't know if I should say who said it. Our friend's mother said it. Basically, like, the show was great. The lead character died.
Yeah.
I don't want to carry on watching the show now. That's kind of what it's like.
Right.
You know, so that's a very good summary, I think, of, like, where the royal family is now. I think that's
100%.
No one really cares about Charles.
No. Yeah. I feel like Kate is they keep trying to, you know, get Kate to step back because she's the star, really. But they're not Camilla and I don't like Camilla at all, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah, not a fan of Camilla.
No.
Mm-mm. Thank you. Any more questions for me, or are we good?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's it, Mr.
Royal British expert.
Lad. My royal correspondent.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole industry built out of it. A lot of people have jobs because of these people's existence.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
The paparazzi, the royal correspondents, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, I mean, I'm pretty sure every major publication that you're in the business, I'm sure every publication has a royal...
correspondent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Crazy. Yep. Well, you know what? If your current occupations don't work out, this could be a new stream of income for you.
Yeah, this is very true. Although it depends what people like might take on the royals. And most people don't.
Well, just say something super controversial and you'll find a niche somewhere.
Yeah. I'm sure we could work with Todger. That's more.
Yeah.
That's my name. But do hit Brett or I up with questions or reactions to what we said, because you know it is a fun conversation to have despite all the talk of not liking the monarchy.
Yes, it is.
It's a fun conversation.
Nice water cooler.
Yeah, exactly. All right, wrap it up.
Okay, and then I guess we say ta-ta.
Ta-ta, Todger's up.
Todger's up. Todger out.